and make a start.
SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and we'll call this the top of the hour. And as we wait for Marcus, and since we just talked about Delaware, one thing I didn't bring up with Jim Dunleavy, I did see that Dave Greinig yesterday circulating the news, and I retweeted it. You do have a combined Delaware-Belmont pick four tomorrow. The cross-country wager. That's always a lot of fun. Everybody loves it. It's one of the funniest things how people just – and I'm as eligible for this as anybody. It's just so much fun to try to combine multi-race wagers and to cross over a couple of different venues. And I'm just trying to check – let's see. First leg is the Kent. The first leg is the Kent. And looking at the Belmont portion of leg B is the eighth race at Belmont. So it goes Kent, Delaware eighth, Belmont eighth, Delaware 9th, Belmont 9th. So the 8th and 9th at both venues, starting with the Kent at 4:56. All right? Kent, and then a nice 8-horse turf sprint, conditional allowance, going 6 on the inner turf. The Delaware Handicap. And the Forbidden Apple. And the Forbidden Apple is a fun, kind of a fun bunch, going a mile. Disco Partner for Christophe Clement, who is unconscious. We talked, 2 weeks ago about Christophe Clement just really starting to click away. And, I mean, everything firing out of that barn. And, of course, the unbelievable win scheme going on with the Jason Service barn. Yesterday, the first-time starter, Lutzky, and owner Jeff Lutzky, who's in partnership with Down Neck Stables, and the first-time starter who came out of the Timonium sale, a Yes, It's True colt, 74 buyer, very solid debut, and one off by a half a dozen, and looked really good doing it. So we'll probably see him in Saratoga. I would expect that was 5.5, so look for him maybe in the Saratoga special. Fourth week of the meet? Yeah, fourth week. Marcus Hirsch joins us. Marcus has been busy because, of course, Arlington, Million Preview Day last Saturday. There's been New Market this week that Marcus is keeping tabs on as the international correspondent. He and Steve Anderson have particular responsibility and interest in the international scene. And then tomorrow night at Indiana Grand, a really nice Derby and Oaks Guard. Marcus, good morning.
Hi, Steve. Don't forget about Prairie. They had all their races last week, too.
That's right, which we talked about.
One horse to watch out of there. She is a Julie horse. The others, I'm glad. Congratulations to all the other winners. Not trying to slight them, but she's the one. That's interesting going forward. And, yeah, Arlington had a great million. Great. I've just become like everybody else, just throwing great around. They had a great Million Preview Day. It was the best Million Preview Day this year, I swear. But, their handle was up. I mean, as far as that goes, their handle was up like 38%, 39%. And, you could see it right from the start. The stakes really came up great. They had big fields. I mean, who knew? That it would make such a huge difference. I think the late pick four killed it over the year before, and the back end of the card, they got engagement and they retained engagement through the entire second half starting well the stakes. So, you know, that's how it's supposed to work. You work hard, you get the horses, you put an appealing product out there, and people responded.
It was also even more challenging than it suggested on paper, and it started immediately with Real Story at 15-2, paying $16.80 for Nacho Correas, and I wanted to stick a needle in my eye watching mid-race, knowing that this horse had potential to wire, and there it was. Nice win. Correas does such a great job.
Oh, he's really, his barn's really coming around right now. I agree. And he's got, people noticed last year what happened with that outfit. It seems, and you know, he's got some good horses, and he really is a thoughtful trainer, I think, who knows a lot about the animals and has thought a lot about training them from a lot of different perspectives, and very blunt, straightforward, intelligent person, and I appreciate his time. He gives a lot of good information. I've learned a lot from him just in a few conversations we've had. But anyway, Real Story, yeah, he ran well. I question whether he'll be like a major factor in the Secretariat. I thought the two races on that card that stood out for me were the Modesty, because I thought, you know, Daddy's Little Darling, the way she ran, you know, being able to keep up that easily and finishing off that race the way she did from a forward position, which is not the way she's often run. You know, she's been just a notch or two behind the very elite in the division. If she's going to build or stylistically alter things a little and not take away from the way she finishes, that could bump her up. I think that's something I'm going to be paying attention to for sure. And then, you know, the ungraded race for three-year-old fillies, Colonia for Grand Motion. I mean, I think she got an 86 buyer. The final figure wasn't great, but I'm not too concerned with that. The course was very speed promoting all race week. It just was very fast ground. Even like Real Story, he went 23-25, I think, for his first quarter. That was with a tailwind. But then he was able to go 12 the rest of the way, finish off in just about 12 seconds for his last eight. So it was a fast course where horses that were forward seemed to have an advantage. She came from last. She was really the only horse that won like that the entire week. And I thought she looked really, really strong. I mean, she'd never been on a firm course like that, and that she apparently just is a completely different horse. If she gets the right conditions, but she's one I would, you know, keep an eye on going forward for sure.
You bring up Colonia, and I mentioned Real Story. There's a commonality there. It's Joe Bravo who showed just how adept he is, Marcus, adjusting to the, you know, to whatever the scenario may be. He's particularly good rallying from off the pace, but on Real Story, he showed how effective he is on the front end too. I thought it was a tremendous showcase for Joe's ability.
He's a very professional rider, and in the last couple of years, I mean, I know it's been well documented, he's found a niche over the summer, you know, going out of town and picking up stakes mounts. And so that means he's adaptable. He rides different courses with similar professionalism. And he's just a guy that people feel comfortable counting on in a lot of circumstances. And it's been a great thing for him.
Absolutely. I mean, think the world of Jersey Joe. And let me tell you, if you were to put him, on a boat up in the lake, he'll be pulling muskies out hand over fist. He's a top fisherman.
Wow. I had no idea. Muskies,
you bet.
Huh?
Absolutely. Wow. Joe would land whatever game fish are still alive in Lake Michigan. He'd be he'll pull them out of
back,
there.
Man.
I tried to reach Napal Chatterpaw the other day. We couldn't get to him. But Cacho and D, Marcus, going back to the first opportunity off the claim in the Man of War, everybody said, you know, this horse could be dangerous if he goes to the lead. And next thing you know, they try to rate him. And finally, Jose Valdivia goes to the lead here in the Stars and Stripes, and it proves to be impossible to pass. And some people were hip to it. He only paid $19.20.
That was a fair, I mean, that was a good price on that horse, if you know.
Yep.
His Manhattan, the Manhattan's an impossible race to figure out because everybody's finished right next to each other, who was good and who wasn't good, but maybe they all were pretty good, you know. I mean, he came out of there, and, no, it was a solid race. I mean, he got a good number for it. I don't, you know, he's going to supposedly run back in the million. That was the last I heard, you know, short, right after the race. I wouldn't necessarily fancy him in that spot. But, you can't fault him. I mean, it's a good claim. I think they claimed him for 40, and they've gotten to run in graded stakes, and they won 100,000, and, you know, they still have a horse. He's an interesting horse. I mean, that was, you know, Arclo didn't run very well in that race, and then Synchrony didn't run very well. He ran fine. He just didn't impress, you know, really in the Ogden handicap. It makes you kind of wonder about the form out of New Orleans this winter. I'm not sure how much I'm going to trust any horses I see coming through that series of races the rest of the summer.
Turn our attention before we get to Indiana. I haven't really expanded much on the Arlington handicap, but my mindset was that I was going to wait for Divisadero to win a race again, and he promptly did. And it wouldn't have really mattered under the scenario, because I didn't use Revved Up either, who ran a big race and then promptly was sold hours later in the sale at
the next day at Phasic Tipton. Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, Synchrony was a disappointment to me. I thought he was going to run better. They're going to cut him back now. I mean, the Visadero was, you know, he ran a fine race. He still got it. I can't really fault his performance, but I mean, I think, you know, Revved Up is a very proven quantity as a measuring stick. And for him to finish that close a second, and also, this was, to me, and I think to a lot of people, the question was whether Divisadero could produce this kind of, you know, his best race over a mile and eighth. He hadn't yet. I think you could say there were circumstances, as much as anything inherent, that had prevented him from doing so. So he got the win in a mile and 16th, but the way, like to me, the way he looked at the eighth pole, he probably should have gone off a little more. I feel like Revved Up was getting back on terms a little bit, and it just solidifies my questions about his effectiveness at a mile and a quarter in top company. He beat me the other day. I was against him, but I'm going to, if he comes back in the million, stretching out another 16th against better horses, I'm not going to be supporting him in that spot. But that being said, all credit to the trainer and owner. I mean, they got a good win. The horse had run well in his last two races. He ran just fine in the Wise Den. He basically had no chance after he got shuffled back 3/8 pole. But if you're looking forward and thinking about how you might approach things in these upcoming races, I think there are some things to consider against him if he goes for a race like the million.
Well, who is million bound out of Saturday?
Oh yeah, well, I mean, Pacho and D, and I mean, I think the Visadero, if he does well, he'll run back, but not Synchrony. So that'd be it from there. I still think it's going to be a pretty. We'll see who ends up coming. I think it should be a decent race. The Beverly D should be great.
Yeah, always a special day at Arlington, and of course,
August 11th. Yeah.
August 11th, circle the calendar, and we'll look forward to visiting with Marcus then as well. Marcus, let's turn our attention to tomorrow night at Indiana. And, you know, I couldn't help, when the card was drawn, I couldn't help but note another terrific regional Derby Oaks Saturday. I mean, Ohio, Iowa, we'll have plenty more, West Virginia yet, and Oklahoma. You know, the regional Derby scene.
That time of year.
Yeah.
I thought, I mean, there's, I've seen stronger top to bottom Indiana Derby. Like IRAP last year, I think he would be a standout in this race.
Poor IRAP.
But yeah, there are some interesting horses. You got the third and the fourth from the Ohio Derby. You got the Matt Winner. You got the Affirmed second. The Easy Goer third. The Hoosier Breeder sophomores fourth. Anyway, yeah, I mean, King Zachary's a 6-5 morning line favorite. It's a kind of a short price on a horse who's got one win that qualifies him to be anywhere near those kinds of odds. He was a 12-1 shot in the Matt win, but I don't know. What are your feelings on him?
I've got a little bit of a affection just because when I asked Dale Romans about 10 days before the Wood, Dale had been on, and I said, Dale, I see that King Zachary's intended for the Wood. Introduce us to King Zachary. And he said, I don't need to do anything. King Zachary will introduce himself to everybody. He didn't that day, but he came back in that sloppy kind of overlooked effort, the allowance win, and really stamped himself. Listen, Dale, we all make fun that Dale loves every single horse he sends out.
I don't do that. That's not what I say. I don't make fun of Dale for anything.
But he said that this was a horse that was talented. They paid $550,000. Tom Conway, he's a Curlin. Giants Causeway.
Paid half of that. Yeah. Anyway, you couldn't fault his last race. I mean, he was kind of ridden along a little bit. It wasn't like he's just like sitting in the bridle like a monster ready to pounce. But when the time came, he was, I think he delivered the performance they hoped to see, you know, earlier in the year in the Wood. But, you know, maybe he's just a little slower to come around and needed a couple more races to, you know, really figure it out. Plus, you know, he had been was on the road for that race too. This is an easy ship from Churchill up to Indiana Grand. So that shouldn't be, you know, as much of an obstacle. I definitely think he can win if he runs right back to the Matt Wynn. And it's not a horse that I'm like totally fading. I just think, I'm not leaving him out in multi-race gimmicks, but I'm not a horse I'd be focusing on necessarily as a win proposition at anything close to that price.
Where do you shake out on Funny Duck, who turned in, you know, the splashy performance?
That was fine. I mean it's a one turn mile in the slop, and then last race he didn't settle at all. I mean, he's gonna have to, I don't know, I don't trust him, you know, to reproduce that one race that puts him in the conversation, which is the Pat Day Mile. That's his only, to me, the only race that's really good enough to give him the shout here. And I mean he's gonna have to relax, you know, going two turns, which I think maybe he did. I haven't watched his turf replays. Maybe he settled better there. But I mean, it's not impossible to me, but I'm not, I won't be using him. I mean, if he wins, I won't win the pick four, you know, whatever. I mean, I'm interested in both the Ohio horses, but I'd prefer Title Ready. I just think he may be improving again now after going through a little lull early in the year. And he did have compromising trouble in this stretch last time. And I don't think that cutback from a mile and an eighth hurts this horse at all. I think that's, and you know, it's a different kind of track too. I think that he'll run better in this race. And I'm not going to overlook Trigger Warning either. Mm. He gave up. That was his first start on Lasix going two turns. He was three wide. He gave up a lot of ground and then he galloped out in front. So he wasn't like just a dead horse. I'm not exactly sure what kind of trip he gets from the rail, but I couldn't toss him.
I I thought at 8-1 that he absolutely deserved plenty of attention. And blame the rider. If we're going to talk about horses that were touted on this show, Doug O'Neill told us about Blame the Rider last year, and it took a while for him to engage, but he certainly headed in the right direction.
Well, yeah, I don't think he's run against great horses on turf, and he looks like he's better on turf. I mean, they won the race last year. I don't blame him taking a shot. It's 500,000. There's nobody here, unless King Zachary turns out to be for real, nobody here to frighten you off. But I'm not getting involved in him. Give me a minute. He could run on for a share, but I have a hard time seeing him winning. I can't get behind the money dance at all. Axelrod, probably not either. Dark Vader is the other one I would be using. Just because, Rugby Man was disappointing to me last time, and I don't know how good the Easy Goer was in the end, but I do think the horse looks more comfortable going two turns at Santa Anita in his pretty solid allowance race. And I think that just running back to that race put him in the conversation here, so I'm going to use him.
The one thing I'll say, when it comes to Blame the Rider, this is a $500,000 race. They've got Blended Citizen running for 150 in the Los Al Derby. I don't know. Yeah. All right.
These guys are one of their reasons they've had so much success is they're not afraid to lose or be wrong. If the money is out there, they're going to take a shot.
Look at Pavel. Pavel's the poster horse.
No, Pavel's, yeah. I mean, I thought Pavel was good since he went to New York last summer. He did some crazy things for a horse without any experience. I don't see that from this horse. I'm wrong, 77% of the time. But I'm going to be wrong on this if he wins.
Let's talk about the girls. And the Indiana Oaks going to go with a mile and a 16th. Kellen Gorder, who was with us to talk about Red Ruby's awesome performance in the Delaware Oaks. I mean, unbelievable. But the star
imagine
here.
How fast she would have run if she wouldn't have gone out and grabbed a soda at the concession stand. The baseball.
No, she's exciting. And she moved right.
I agree. Suddenly, the three-year-old filly class, which was much maligned by me, at least, early in the year, I just didn't think there. I thought there were two horses that looked like they could be really good: Midnight Bisou and Monomoy Girl. Suddenly, they're starting to pop up. I mean, Red Ruby was good, and then this horse in the Indiana Oaks, Todd Roof, to me, I think she's got tremendous potential. I mean, she's done a lot with little experience. This is her first time two turns. Really excited to see her run.
What's unusual, Marcus, and you bring this up, and I really should have this discussion with Sid next week, now that it's come up. Invariably, or typically, fillies will be flashy, more flashy early than males as two-year-olds. It's very strange.
That's why they get away with. Well, I mean, look at Wesley at Keeneland. Yep. He'll run, or not just Keeneland, anywhere. He'll run the fillies against any male because they tend to mature earlier. They're just as fast as the boys early in the two-year-old year. But that doesn't mean within that set that there can't be a later maturing group. And to me, the class looks much stronger now at the top 10 than it did 3 months ago.
Agreed. It's a very interesting circumstance that sees these fillies by mid-year really emerging, and particularly when you think about the distance involved, like Wonder Godot and her performance at the mile and a quarter in the Queen's Plate, and now she'll head to the Alabama. This is Red Ruby being a tiz now. She's got every reason to the way she finished to look like the mile and a quarter is in her wheelhouse. It's a very interesting development. Well, the rest of this group, any Any upsetters?
No.
Not really?
No.
All right.
I mean, it's a stone single to me, and I mean, I just don't – I think she's really good. I think she's bred to like two turns. The trainer thinks she's going to love two turns. She's run against two of the faster horses in her in the generation in her last two starts. She still has upside. I mean, she's got a profile where she can be on the lead or right off the pace. I think she's going to relax just fine. I don't, you know, everyone can have an off night and 3-10 shots lose, but I'm not against this one. Sorry.
I got you. The rest of the undercard, the General Assembly Distaff. Mm-hmm. You got the Warriors Veterans. The Mary Hillman George. Of course, the family tied to the Speedway, and the Michael Schaefer. A lot of familiar horses dot this lineup.
Yeah, Seeking the Soul is the most notable one, running in the Schaefer. His first start since the Pegasus. He's 3-5 on the line. I wouldn't mind taking a shot against him. That ends a pick four that I'm going to get involved in. I like a horse in the pre-stakes maiden race, race two. I mean, I will use a few horses in that race, I think three probably, but I'm going to try to beat the favorite Savvy Shipman in that maiden race. The horse that I thought was really interesting was the 20-1 number one, Appealing Allure, going two turns for the first time. The Dam, her first two foals to race are both stakes winners, including the 7-2 shot in the Warrior Veterans. My Barilli, that's this horse's brother, Appealing Allure's brother. I'd like to get things started with her winning. I don't know if she'll be 20-1, but she would definitely be a pick four boost. And then the Holman George, to me, the first of the stakes, you know, that's got to be a spread. I can't really separate consequentially like four horses, Torin, Promise of Spring, Awestruck, No. 5, Pinch Hit, and Summer Luck. Those horses all, I mean, to me, like it's just an incremental difference. I have no clear understanding of who's better in that group. And then if you could manage to you get Seeking the Soul to run second or third in the Schaefer, I think you might be onto something there.
Nice. It's a fun card, and the action starts at 5:30 Eastern at Indiana Grand. The stakes action begins with the George at 6:54. The graded stakes, the Oaks at 9:01 and the Derby at 9:45. And of course, Marcus, Newmarket, you've got tomorrow, right? You got the July Cup.
You got today. You got this freakish Alpha Centauri running.
Yes.
In 13 minutes. She's 6-5. She's dead on the board. In North American Tote. Anyway, yeah, and the July, yeah, did a couple races there. I didn't even look at the race tomorrow. I looked at the one today, and I'm going to be looking forward to watching it in a few minutes. Yeah.
Well, we always look forward to opportunities to discuss the racing with Marcus Hirsch, and you can follow Marcus, and of course, most of you are already on Twitter, DRF Hirsch. Save the C that you might be inclined to put in his name. Save it for Mike Welsh's name.
Unless you're bots, then you've been kicked out of my followers. Sorry, bots.
How about that? How many bots did you lose?
I'm down to I've got four followers left on Twitter. I think it's my wife and a couple other idiots. And I'm not calling my wife an idiot.
You're in trouble. You're a chicken in a pot. Marcus Hirsch, everybody. Marcus, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Steve.
It is so fun. Let's take a break. We're way behind because it's funny. We lost 3 minutes because of Comcast hiccup down in Florida, but somehow we managed to be 20 minutes behind now. It's funny. I mentioned as we were waiting for Marcus, I mentioned that service 2-year-old yesterday, Lutzky. That horse, that's a lesson in 2-year-old in training sale statistics. In fact, Nick Tamaro joins us next, and Nick can speak to this too because he does it, and there's a lot of savvy players. When you see that a horse has been purchased in a 2-year-old in training sale, like Lutzky was, $135,000,
at the Timonium sale in May. You can go to, in this case, the Fasig website, or OBS, wherever the training sale was, and go look at the video. And this was a colt that breezed in 21-4, went a quarter. Wes Carter sold this. Yes, it's true colt. And that was tied for the third fastest quarter mile. And you can watch the video. You can see how accomplished and how much they do it on their own, or if they were, you know, exhorted and, you know, hooped and you know, shown the stick and so forth, as is frequently the case. But there's a lot of opportunity when it comes to getting a little added edge beside pedigree in the two-year-old sales exiters, the graduates that are coming off of those efforts. And you can see how accomplished and polished a horse like this might have been. Now, I mean, he still isn't. He went favored. It's not like he paid $23, but that's true of long shots that you're going to see at Del Mar and Saratoga too. Back after this with Nick.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Internationally and from coast to coast on every circuit, Biomedical Research Labs provides superior equine supplements to more than half of the leading trainers. Isn't it about time you join the family? To learn more about how EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield can fit into your program, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Maybe I'm foolish, maybe I'm blind, thinking I can see through this and see what's behind. Got no way to prove it, so maybe I'm lying. But I'm only human after all. I'm only human after all. Don't put your blame on me. Don't put your blame on me. Take a look in the mirror, what do you see? See it clearer, or are you deceived in what you believe? 'Cause I'm only human after all.
We're back at the races, 20, make it 30, halfway really on this weekend preview. And Nick Tamaro, he's not human. He's a machine. He's like a human version of computer robotic wagering. He goes to Arlington every year for the preview card, and he qualifies for the NHC. He did it again. Congratulations.
Thanks, Steve. I appreciate it. Yeah, I was afraid that you I was afraid that maybe you had jinxed me saying that I was going to go and do it on Friday, but of course, not quite. I was able to get it done. And, yeah, it was a lot of fun. And, I mean, it was obviously, it's never expected, right? But you try to get yourself in position however you can. I had two entries. First one flamed out very, very quickly. Second one, on my second bet, I hit the exacta in the fifth at Belmont, and that got me a little bit of a profit. And then mainly just kind of poked around from there. Had a couple of decent size hits. Had one in the maiden race at Arlington right before the stakes started. Ended up hitting the trifecta there. And then of the stakes races, the best score up to that point was the Daddy's Little Darling Prado Sweet Ride exacta. I had, I think, an $80 exacta and a $5 try or something in that range. And then what put me in position to basically coast the rest of the way was the Stars and Stripes, where I keyed Solio, Kecho Endai, and Kanasar. So that worked out really, really well because I hit every bet that I made. So one of the things that I like to do in trifecta wagers and especially in contests, and I've had a lot of success with this particular structure, trifecta wager-wise, is to take three horses and play them in like a 1-2-9, 1-2-9. And that was a race where you could eliminate the 10 and 12. And I think I eliminated the 6, if I'm not mistaken. So I played 1-2-9, 1-2-9 with 1-2-3-4-5, 7-8-9-10. And, you know, that was a base wager of $36 for each dollar. And I played $2 tickets and mixed them all around. I put the 1, 2, and 9 first and second. I put them first and third. I put them second and third. And obviously, you really, really score on this when they run 1, 2, 3. I had also boxed them in the exacta, which almost seemed piggish after the race was over. But so obviously them coming in some combination of those three, the only way I could have hit it better is if Solio had run second. So that was about $7,000 between the exacta and the trifecta. That put me in position where I was leading by about 5,000 at the time. Mm. And then, of course, Garrett Skiba found a way to hit the last race, which he does very regularly. And didn't make a peep, and then walked up to some of us gathered thereafter and said, "Oh yeah, I have $1,000 to win, a $200 exacta, and a $25 try." So there went any aspirations for winning. Of course, this is a different kind of contest because there's no prize pool. So, you know, what I did from the time that I hit that eighth race at Arlington, there were still, I think, four races left, two at Belmont, two at Arlington. There was one more at Gulfstream. I didn't bet. Because I knew that you know, in all likelihood, 10,600 was going to be good enough at least for fourth, and that would have gotten me a spot. Now, did I prefer the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge seat? Sure, but the situation there was one where if I was going to get that, I'd be fine with it, and if I was going to get the NHC seat, I'd be fine with it. I already have a partnership of people that play the BCBC anyway. If we can get a free one, that'd be even better. But sure, it wasn't enough motivation to start betting and potentially risk where I stood. So I was able to hold on to third, which worked out fine, and that will get me back to the NHC. Chris Pepsnick, who runs the tournament at Arlington, and I were laughing about it, and he said, yeah, I might as well just pencil you in each year. So it's worked out well. It's the second year in a row where I really did the majority of my damage at Arlington, and can't say enough about the quality of the card there. The card was really, really outstanding, yeah. And it worked out very, very well. It made up for my atrocious opinions at Belmont, and was able to get out of there alive.
It's funny because it was a challenging day, and you mentioned the two major venues when it came to sequences, and Belmont, it's not like there was anybody that was such a shocking winner.
Right.
Athena was the longest price, but she wasn't a complete shock. I think a lot of people would have, you know, taken the position that you and I did, that, you know, the domestic fillies were the, you know, were the ones you wanted, and you had to really be clever to land on that sequence between Athena and Diversify. That either or could have quashed anybody.
No doubt about it. And you know, I mean, looking back on it, especially the way the race unfolded, I felt like I played the the Suburban very well. I played for a collapse. You know, I played for what we kind of talked about on Friday, which was some combination of Taprit, opportunity, and take your guns. And not so much for them to be 1-2 or 1-2-3, but for them to at least get a pretty big slice of it. And I thought as those fractions went up on the board, I had a pretty reasonable chance. Diversify just kept going. We already knew that he was a very quality animal ahead of time, so credit to him. And, you know, the Belmont Oaks, I think as we were watching it unfold, kind of felt like the three horses scrimmaging for the lead up the backstretch would probably hang around just because they were better than everybody else in the field. But I think that pace was much, much faster than anybody could have imagined. And that was detrimental, obviously. And it was another situation where, and now she's becoming, I guess she's becoming a little bit of a disappointment. But I have to tell anybody that really wants to write significant form off is, regardless of how you felt about La Signore and Toinette, look at where they finished and look at where significant form finished.
Right.
So she actually ran a very, very good race at a distance that's almost certainly a little farther than she likes. Now, I don't think that we're going to sneakily find a way to get a big price on significant form anywhere, but if you see some of those horses come back in a race like the Lake Placid, I'm fully going to expect significant form to turn the table. So she, you know, there was that result, and obviously Athena was the one that I think me and a lot of other people overlooked, being that she was coming back so quickly off the Pretty Polly. But we've seen Aidan O'Brien do that, and it worked out, got a good setup. So did Hunting Horn, and he was just third best behind what looked like two really quality three-year-old turf colts. And hopefully they'll continue their battle elsewhere, maybe in the Secretariat, maybe down the line in the Hill Prince again, because Analyze It Now has shown that he can find a way to lose a race, and it looks like he was almost 1-10 at the eighth pole in each of his last two starts. But Catholic Boy certainly is very, very gritty. So, similar to Arlington, the Belmont card was outstanding, and I think the wagering numbers showed it. So even though I certainly didn't light up the board with my performance there, it was still very interesting to watch.
Go back for a minute, and let's help people. We don't have a big agenda today in terms of handicapping the Saturday cards. So let's talk more about that Stars and Stripes, because I think people will benefit, Nick, for you to expound on the zeroing in on Kinesar Solio and Cacho and D. And Cacho and D, we talked about going into the Manhattan, and they're at the time, it seemed that Chatter Paul, when we think back to Mission, what was it, Mission Approved, I think,
Mission
was
approved,
his
yeah.
magical success along these lines. Now he's done it again. But Mission Approved, the whole concept was take a horse that is going to take him as far as he can on the lead. Certainly, you know, you look at what Scooter Dickey's done with One Go, All Go. And then Cacho and D, they try to rate in the Manhattan, which was just disastrous. Finally here, Valdivia, whether it was Chatter Paul directing him to take control, he gets it done on the lead. But how did you determine that Arklo, for instance, wasn't going to be part of the strategy? And talk about eliminating horses and that approach to take these three and then build the tickets.
You know, one of the, in terms of my overall contest play, and I think this applies to regular everyday play too, because of course when I'm talking about contest play, I'm talking about gambling. I'm not talking about $2 win place contests. One of the things that you learn, and it usually is a very expensive lesson, is that the more you can trim down your wagers and narrow down the number of horses that you're using on your bets, the better you're going to be in the long run, because obviously you're going to win more when you win, and that's going to make up for the times that you might lose, even though you had a pretty good opinion all in all. So I was lulled into a little bit of a false sense of security in the 2014 Breeders' Cup, in that I had some nice trifecta hits on the Saturday card where I used all in certain spots. And, you know, it's a little bit different for a race like the Breeders' Cup, where there actually is a reasonable argument to be made in every race that every horse could win. But, you know, when you're betting a 10-horse, $12,500 claimer at Santa Anita, you really don't need to be using all. You need to be relying on yourself to trim at least two or three horses off those tickets. And the amount that it's going to save you and allow you to probably up the denomination of your wager and maybe turn a $3 try into a $5 try, it's just one of those that's going to help you churn more money through the long run. So, you know, for me, my thing with Ketcho and NDA or Ndai, however you pronounce his name, it was that I felt like he was very close to that Manhattan pace, which was strong. And though the field kind of came together right at the finish, there's no denying that however you feel about the Manhattan, horses like Spring Quality and High Happy and Sadler's Joy and Robert Bruce, you compare them to what he was running against on Saturday, and the class drop was just immense. So these two races he was coming out of where, you know, depending on how you feel about turf speed figures, speed figure-wise, he was right on top of everybody in that field and certainly had what looked like a pace advantage given his inside post and the proximity to the pace that he had had in his last two starts. It basically felt like a boil down to he and Harlan Strong in terms of who would go to the lead, and Valdivia committed right out of the gate. You saw some sharp workouts on his running lines as well, so it felt like he was probably coming into the race in good form. And what led me to Kinesar, to me, was the horse that was the horse to beat. He was always going to be the one that you wanted to plan on being in the exacta, if not the trifecta, if not the exacta, based on the race he ran in the Belmont Gold Cup and the fact that he's just a marathoner. You know, a mile and a half and up is exactly what's going to work for him, and I would imagine now, depending on who comes over from Europe, he'll probably be the American St. Ledger favorite on Arlington Million Day, given that the extra ground that he'll get will certainly not hurt him one iota. So he was kind of a natural inclusion for me. Solio had the look of a horse that Mike Maker got with intent and planned on stretching out. He was a horse that had talent early in his career. I think there were big expectations for him going all the way back to the fall of his two-year-old season. So for me, Arklow was the kind of horse that I will admit that the way that Esmosh had run and the way some of Brad Cox's horses had run on the card already did not inspire a lot of confidence. Arklow to me was also a horse that wasn't exactly screaming out for a mile and a half. And I know that Cox is a lot like Maker in that he'll take some of these horses that look like they might be a little bit distance limited and end up getting quite a bit more ground out of them. But he didn't look like one to me, and that was just a good gamble on my part that he was bad value. And what I felt like was, one of the reasons why I bet the exact also is because obviously a not a nightmare scenario, but a bad scenario for me would have been a Solio, Ketcho Ndai, Arklow result. But then I would have at least had, I would have had some money on a $150 exacto or so. So that was kind of why the two wagers were made that way. But this is a kind of bet that I've made numerous times. I used it to hit the trifecta in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies in 2014, narrowed it down. I used four horses that day rather than three and did use all, and that's how Take Charge Brandy entered the equation. Then did the same thing later on in the mile, used four horses, played four horses over all, and they ended up, three of them ended up running 1-2-3 at 30-1, 10-1, and 20-1. So, this is the kind of bet that I will only make if at least a couple of the horses are prices. What I'm doing basically is looking to try and get those good value horses into the mix and get them, even if they're second and third behind a reasonably priced horse, because the good thing about it is that you can take that initial wager and then you can start shaving horses from there. Even if you want to use all and you use all for two units, then maybe you come back for five or six and you shaved off three or four horses, which obviously is going to put you in position to make quite a bit more if one of those horses that you now have on your more compact ticket is able to run in the money. So that's probably my preferred trifecta strategy. I can't tell you how many days in high school I wasted thinking about this, sitting in class, and thought about which wheels worked best. And I was a 2x2x all kind of guy, and then that morphed into 3x3. I've done a lot of 1x4x all, and then narrowed down from there. So it's really based on your opinion. It's based on how you approach the race. And to me, if I could wheel three horses in a race like the Stars and Stripes, where I think the favorite has some vulnerability, and two of them are in the 7-1 and 8-1 range, that's fine. I'm gonna take that any time. And so that was why I was successful there. Now, in terms of talking about something like a 1x3x all, the modesty, I keyed Daddy's Little Darling, and I used three horses that were all over 10-1. And my goal there was, at least in the exacta, to beat horses like Halle Bell and Celestial Insight. And Prado Sweet Ride was one of those horses. So that was a situation where I hit the exacta, would have hit the trifecta even more if one of my three horses that I played under Daddy's Little Darling in the exacta had also run third. So, for example, I think it was Conte Partiro ran fourth. Not that it was close for third, but if she had run third, then I would have had an $80 exacta and a $20 try. So that would have been a real score. So that's kind of the fun of these things. Obviously, you can get involved in them, and if you, you know, if you're up in that, I think for that particular race, I was up about $2,000 going into it, so I had a little leeway, right? I mean, I had a little flexibility. I could have, I could bet with a little bit more. A little bit more gusto, and that is how I play live money contests. I'm a grinder. You know, I'm not one of these guys that, I mean, and it's happened, obviously, but I'm not one of these that waits and tries to make 20,000 in the last race. I would rather get to 18,000 going into the last race and then only have to bet $2,000. So that's the one part that I probably still need to work out in terms of the optimal approach, but this was structured more or less. This went the way I normally play my contest, which is that I try to chip away all day long, and I'll bet every race and just try and outlast everybody and hopefully watch their bankroll shrink while mine stays somewhat healthy. And I finally, you know, finally put it together. So looking forward to getting back to the NHC, whatever your feelings are about the NHC. It's a tremendous event. It's a great place to gather together with other horse players. And it is basically, with due respect to EquestriCon, which is racing's convention, so to speak, the horse players' convention is the NHC. And that's where we all see each other and you know, certainly share bad beat stories and other pleasantries or lack thereof, depending on who you're talking to. And yeah, do you look forward to it for quite a while? It's a good little retreat in February. Of course, I'm not escaping cold weather. Everybody that's there that's like, oh, it's great to get out of the cold weather, is like, yeah, well, it's 70 at home. But no, it'll be a lot of fun. And this is going to be my sixth one. My big thing is I have to get to 10 because they give you some kind of recognition at 10. And if I were to get to 10, then I would have qualified for my sixth NHC. My 10th NHC before the age of 40. So that would be. I know these are. You're probably and everybody who's going to listen to this on the podcast and is listening right now is thinking you have some unbelievable life aspirations. If these are the things that you actually sit around thinking about, that you can have a bunch of people, 500 relative strangers, you know, acknowledge you for qualifying for a tournament 10 times. And what I feared also is that I would qualify 10 times and have never cashed. So at least I cashed in February. So I've got that, you know, I've got that out of the way. Now I can improve on that. Paul Matisse and I joked about that all the time, which, by the way, Paul's appearance on the show the other day was incredible. Paul joked about that because he was honored for having qualified 10 times and he had never won any money. And then the 11th year he won.
Exactly.
Exactly. So you just never know. I mean, it's pretty much everybody that's qualified a bag of times. They've got that one where things went really well. Then you've got guys like Roger Satina who are just, you know, and the Shermans that are so good at this that they'll have multiple. Our guy Danny Kaye has been in the top five twice. So it's something that you could definitely do multiple times. But yeah, it's funny how it works out.
Well, the dancing Dodger, Roger Satina. He's the Hall of Fame rooter. Yes, nobody gets him home like Raj. And he's due for converting a top two finish into a win. A couple of side notes out of the triple structure conversation. Any win bets involved, and do you do the same things on a casual Saturday when you're not in a contest as you do in the contest approach?
Yes to both. There were win bets involved depending on exactly how, obviously in a situation where I played Daddy's Little Darling with three horses that were over 10 to 1, I wouldn't bet Daddy's Little Darling to win at 6 to 5 or 7 to 5. That's just some, you know, not something that I would do. But yeah, there will be, you know, there might be races where I'll do more of a win and exacta type of approach. Like, for example, I bet Tricky Escape to win in the stake race at Delaware at 6-1, and then I think she ended up going off 7-2 or 4-1 or something in that range. There was a lot of late money, and I probably bet before the majority of the money was in the pool, and then didn't have the exacta because I didn't have Giovanna Blue second, despite my mother's name being Giovanna, but that wasn't really an angle I was playing. So I ended up doing fine. I think I made about $600-$800 on the race or something in that range. So, because I didn't make a big bet by any means. But yeah, it'll just depend on the race, depend on the opinion. If there's one horse that I want to key a little bit more than others, then I'll certainly bet them to win. And, you know, I'll move it around. I'm unconventional in terms of how I play these things. I don't take the same approach over and over. You know, I'm not one of these guys that wants to Dutch daily doubles all day long or bet exacta boxes all day long or make big win place bets, which I know a lot of people do in these live money contests. I mean, when they start publishing plays on these things, people are going to see what I do and they're going to think, well, there's no indication of what this guy's going to do, because he might be betting tries when you think he's betting win in exacta, and he might be not betting when you think he's betting, and vice versa. So I probably keep myself more off balance than anything else, but I never want to pigeonhole myself to one strategy. And I struggled throughout 2015 by trying to stick to that almost all trifecta approach, because I had most of my success in live money tournaments with trifectas. But so there's something obviously that I will use and I will play pretty regularly, but I make way more win bets in these contests and way more exacta bets than I ever have before. You know, using a race like the Woody Stevens as an example in the Belmont contest, I bet still having fun to win and just bet exactas of him over four horses. So that was, you know, that was a scenario where I probably would have made, you know, $600 worth of trifecta bets back in a couple of years ago and would have been cursing because Promises Fulfilled held on for third, World of Trouble held on for third, somebody who wasn't much of a price and negatively affected my trifecta payoff. And, you know, I kind of reached the conclusion that you can't put yourself in a position where a 13-1 beats a 7-2, both of whom you liked, and you're cursing because of who ran third. So that's a little bit more of trying to fire a kill shot. And I think in these things, you can make an impact no matter what. But knowing the exact probables and knowing how to weight your opinion in just a two-spot wager, you can really – I mean, I think the biggest moves that you'll see people make in these tournaments are going to be with a big exacta bet. Occasionally, there's going to be a big try bet, but I think I'm in the minority that are trying to do it that way. And then obviously, you're going to have people making big win bets as well. So I think it just gravitates a little bit more towards those – the win and exacta pools in terms of how you really strike quickly.
Well, Nick, very valuable insights, and of course, delighted for you. Quick question, because the faithful will want at least one idea or two. Anything Forbidden Apple or anything catch your eye tomorrow? Anything?
You know, it's a good race itself. You know, I wonder how much offering plan is just kind of being set up for, I guess, the West Point or any other race at Saratoga. I suppose he could run the four-star Dave. I don't know. It's obviously a big advantage to having these New York breds that can run against open company. And Chad Brown certainly has a dearth of good turf horses. So it's good to see that he's got offering plan running against New York breds. But he's obviously whether Disco Partner at the mile has always made me nervous when it's around two turns, but around one turn, he's a very, very tough horse at a mile. So, you know, I think if you wanted to do the whole who's the horse to beat conversation, he's probably the horse to beat because of his ability at Belmont. But at the same time, you know, you want to at least acknowledge offering plan being the kind of horse that just seems so, I don't know, he's so impervious to negative pay scenarios and turf condition. Not that there's going to be a problem with the turf, but just a horse that kind of grabs his lunch pail and goes to work every time. So I think that it'll boil down to those two. We'll see if Voodoo Song can hang around for a bit. Obviously, he's been able to do that in the past. Fun to see Mr. Haverkamp back. I know that a lot of people kind of fancied him in the Saranac last year, which obviously was a very good running of that race. Blind Ambition will have some speed too. Pocket Change should have some speed. So it feels like a race that'll move along at a pretty good early clip, and that'll certainly work against Voodoo Song and probably end up putting it in the hands of Disco Partner and offering plan. I can tell you this much. It's not a job that I want by any means, but there's not a chance in hell that offering plan is going off at 6-1 in this race.
No, and I'll stop at Pocket Change for a second because I know – you know, the internet will go crazy if Jason Service were to win this. To the horse's credit, I get the sense that he wants every bit of a mile. He hasn't been beyond 6 furlongs yet. He's Unbridled Song out of an AP Indy mare, and if they go quick and run away from him, Jose Lascano, a very good jock switch to me for this horse, and he could maybe settle and come with a run. And I think Pocket Change, I know people will assume all the things they seem to be assuming, but I think the stretch to a mile fits him better than anybody.
Yeah, look, I am not making any anti-Jason Service remarks, comments, anything like that. What he's doing right now in terms of the run he's on is incredible. And this is a horse that probably does want to go the longer distance. It's kind of funny that he was kept going shorter for those first three starts of his career. And, you know, he was hurt by the pace last time. There's no doubt that given the turf condition, that was a very, very slow pace. Look, it was a tremendous effort by Disco Partner. I mean, it was almost as good as you're going to find, given the way that race was setting up. So, you know, his pocket change is the kind of horse that can settle maybe 2-3 lengths off the lead if we see Blind Ambition and Voodoo Song want to really battle in the early stages. Yeah, I mean, it's possible. I could also see Lascano breaking with intent and getting to the front, you know, trying to dictate terms to everybody else on what will probably be a pretty hardened, baked, you know, midsummer turf course at Belmont. So, no, this is a horse this looks more like a 6-1 shot to me, and this is the kind of horse that will offer some value in the multis that you might want to take a little bit of a plunge with.
Always valuable to sit with Nick and talk about any part of horseplay and race analysis. And you'll be up at Saratoga soon enough. Looking forward to seeing you. And we'll obviously talk next Friday for opening day Spa.
It's amazing. It's come up very, very quickly. But, yeah, one of the most wonderful times of the year, no doubt. I'm going to Del Mar in 2 weeks, and then I'll be up at Saratoga for the Travers. Can't wait.
Nick Tamaro, everybody. NTAMM, NTAMM, 1215. Thanks, Nick.
Thank you, Steve. Have a good weekend.
Coming up toward the top of the hour, and somehow we've fallen behind. I was supposed to have both Scully and DeRosa, and we'll try to, I don't know how we're going to get both of them in. We got Hammer, and we got Joe Applebaum yet in hour three. So stay where you are. Weekend preview at the races. Back after this, Casey and I will put our heads together and figure out how to fit the proverbial size 10 into the 9 slot. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Fun in the Sun is ExpressBet's summer treasure. If you can't make it to the spa or where the surf meets the turf, do the next best thing and play Saratoga and Del Mar with ExpressBet. And while you're at it, don't miss ExpressBet's $100,000 Fun in the Sun handicapping competition. Play Saturdays by making a live $10 win wager on one horse in each of 10 competition races. Each week, top players collect $4,000 for first, $2,000 for second, and $1,000 for third. Plus, based on cumulative earnings throughout the season, the top four finishers will win Pegasus World Cup Handicapping Championship seats, a $12,000 value each. Pre-registration is now open for account holders only. Don't miss this fantastic opportunity to shoot for some cool Fun in the Sun Saturday summer cash with ExpressBet Saratoga and Del Mar. Visit ExpressBet.com now to open an account and for complete Fun in the Sun details.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Pirana here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.